Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan. I have Mikey and John joining me to discuss another win. Illinois now 6-1, 26-14 over Minnesota this Saturday. Mikey, 12-0 prediction at the beginning of the year is just starting to look better and better week by week.
Yeah, I know. And you gave us the hall pass to tell you that your prediction was dumb when you made
it was
the prediction that the Illini were going to lose. So this
hand
is
up.
Me telling you that again.
Hand
and
up.
I know you will gladly take that.
I don't think I can pick against Illinois ever again. Or maybe I should I just keep doing it just because like every time I do it, they prove me wrong or nah? I don't think I can continue to pick against Illinois every week.
Yeah, I don't know how. I think this is probably our like 50 or 60th episode, and I don't think I've picked against Illinois once. So starting to finally turn in my favor. But no, I mean, what a dominant win. I was just checking the box scores earlier today, and there were a couple key stats that I wanted to point out. First one is 3 turnovers to no turnovers, which is obviously huge. You look at the percentages of a +3 turnover margin, it's the odds of winning go up substantially. And then fourth down, we're 4-for-4 on fourth down. And I texted you guys during the game and said, this is a team that's playing to win. And it was cool to see that. And it seems like we have our go-to plays when we need to get those extra yards to extend drives. And hearing the announcers talk about Brett Bielema and Barry Lunny Jr., they call it like a quattro series. So if they're like, Barry knows it's 4-down territory, which obviously changes up the play calling a little bit to know you have that extra down to go for it. But I love to see it. I mean, even after that long kick return, Minnesota scores right after the half, you know, we didn't falter, came back, you know, scored, went right down the field. It's times like that in prior seasons that would have broke this team and it would have been a runaway for Minnesota. But as we've talked about a bunch, you know, the floor of this team has gone up a lot in such a short amount of time. And, you know, it's great to see it, you know, reciprocate to wins. And now, you know, 6-1 going into the bye week.
I mean, just to touch on the fourth down thing, Mikey, because I love that you brought that up. I know that it might be a byproduct of Caleb Griffin being out, but the fact that now Coach Bielema was getting like an advanced sample size of having to go for it on fourth down and them being, I think they've only missed one in recent vintage. It's like, all right, well, now this is like actually a viable thing that you can do. And yes, I understand that like the evolution from last year to this year is him trusting, you know, probably Barry Lunny a little bit more than Tony Peterson and trusting, you know, the guys a little bit more, but it's still just nice to see that. But yeah, overall, I just can't get over the fact that there were only, what, 6 completions in the game.
Yeah.
Like that's just banana land.
It's ridiculous. They had 6 catches for 38 receiving yards, but here's my favorite part looking at the box score. They had one player who received for more than 5 yards in the entire game. One player had more than 5 receiving yards. Isn't that insane? Like, is this secondary that good? Or like, was the game plan that like, I don't even know where to start when you look at a stat like that.
Yeah. You know, the secondary is very good. There are some, you know, mid-season All-American lists that came out and I saw Spoon and Quan were both on one, which is, you know, incredible. But to do that, I know Tanner Morgan got injured, but when he was playing, you know, that's a guy he's played a lot of football. You know, Illini fans definitely know the name Tanner Morgan because he shredded us before in the past. So to hold a team to 38 passing yards when a sixth-year quarterback, very experienced, was playing, you know, majority of the time is just incredible. And I think it's down to schemes and the players that we have back there in the second. I mean, it's really a full defensive effort, you know, pressure by the defensive line, causing missed throws, mishaps, and then just lockdown D by our corners. And, you know, the safeties are flying all around the field.
you know what's wild to me is thinking about this in the context of like going back to when PJ Fleck was hired and thinking about how well they've recruited over the past, you know, whatever, 5-6 years, and how we haven't, you know, really recruited as well as the rest of the Big Ten West. And it's like, we just looked faster and better and more physical out there. So I don't really know what the mismatch was there in terms of just like, is our coaching that much better? Do we actually have really good players there? I mean, obviously we do, but just Mikey, like you were saying, in terms of like some of these guys on, you know, All-American watch lists just coming out of like, yeah, it's banana land. And I just don't understand like how this is happening. And I also love too the fact that like it's balancing out in terms of we had what, you know, elite rush defensive performances in terms of like holding Wisconsin to 2 yards and holding Iowa under 100. And it's like, now we have this ridiculous stat of holding the Minnesota team to 6 completions and 38 yards. Like this is, it just, you know, pick your poison. Like, do you want to get stopped in your run game or do you want to get your pass game stopped? It's just, it's amazing.
Aside from 2 plays by Minnesota, this was about as dominant of a performance as Illinois could have had. I look at the whatever 90 plus yard kick return that set them up to score a touchdown. And then Mo Ibrahim got loose for 1 44-yard run. But aside from those 2 plays, I mean, that kept the box score and the, you know, the scoreboard looking close, but this was about as dominant of a performance as Illinois could have had, save for those 2 plays.
Yeah. That sounded like a Tim Beckman quote there, Dan. we
were 5 plays away from winning this ball game.
We lost 35-7, but if you take out those 5 plays, it's a 7-7 ball game. It's like, yeah, but you can't do that. And we got killed, but yeah, no, I mean, dominant performance, outside of a couple of those plays, the kickoff, they need to fix something there. I know, you know, our starting kicker is out, which I do want to ask you guys this question after that, but I don't know. I feel like whenever we kick off, I'm like holding my breath because I just feel like they're going to break one. And that's why, you know, I feel like when Caleb does get back, just boot it out of the end zone, you know, let him start with the touchback. Cause it's better than, you know, giving up those 90 yarders, which, you know, should change the momentum of the game, but thankfully, you know, it didn't last week. But now my question for you guys, when Caleb Griffin comes back, who do we go with as our place kicker? Do you ride out Fabrizio Mastacholi or do you go to Caleb Griffin? Because Fabrizio, I mean, he hasn't missed yet. I know his maybe it's something where, you know, you have a short kicker and a long kicker. But, you know, from 40 and in, I'm riding with Fabrizio all the way.
Yeah, the thing about Fabrizio, he's made kicks, but they haven't all been right down the middle. Like if you go back and watch, a couple of them really squeaked in there from 30 yards. At the end of the day, they are makes, but I almost feel like you got to go back to Caleb Griffin. He's got the bigger leg, and especially on the kickoffs, you need someone who can put it in the end zone so we aren't holding our breath like that, Mikey. The only time I felt safe was when we hit that short like pooch kick that the lineman caught for Minnesota.
Caught it. Yeah.
Like I felt much better giving them the extra whatever 5 yards instead of kicking it and seeing where they could return it to. So I think Caleb Griffin is still the better kicker, the more experienced guy, and I think he's the guy I'd rather have in a big moment later on during the season.
Yeah, I pretty much echo all those sentiments. I mean, there's something to be said about having the known commodity of Breezy in your pocket in case, like, yeah, you need to go back to just going for it on 4th downs when you're inside the 40 and then just letting him, you know, kick the easy ones. It's funny because the shift in tenor from the kickoff before half when we got the field goal and then we kicked it off and then stopped him, I think, inside the 20 or something like that, and then them coming out and returning one almost for a touchdown, which also was incredible because I don't know if you guys, like, watched it back, but Peyton Vining pushing Talon Letzy into the returner to tackle him, it was just amazing because, like, you don't know if Talon's going to catch him. And then you just see Peyton Vining, like, put, and yeah, it also ultimately didn't mean anything, but I love it because I feel like that's something like Bielema was just going to, like, put up on the big screen and be like, this is football. Like, this is amazing. Like, this is you going out for your guys and just, like, finding a way to make a play.
Yeah. Great overall football. Hi, Vining there. Awareness play. which, you know, we're fans of on this podcast. But really, yeah, I mean, no complaints from this weekend. I know we talked about this stretch of Wisconsin, Iowa, and Minnesota being so pivotal, you know, not only for this season, but just going forward. And now we look back, I feel like that Wisconsin game was 4 months ago. You know, it just seems like the anticipation building for each week is just more and more and more and more. And now here we are, you know, after the second quarter of games, 3-0. So can't be mad with what the record stands.
Mike, you might have been the only person in Illini Nation that thought 3-0 was a possibility in that stretch. But here we are on the other side, and we made it out without a loss somehow.
No, I think we're, you know, starting to get the notoriety that we need too amongst,
oh yeah,
you know, media. Like I see they'll show our highlights on like SportsCenter, like CBS or something, and it's just like, wow. Like before, you know, if you know, we beat a Minnesota team, you know, we were 3-3, they were 4-1, 4-2, whatever, you know, they wouldn't show it. And now it seems like, you know, the nation, not only, you know, Illini Nation, but the actual entire nation is starting to see that, you know, we're a legit football team.
It's funny to me that you get that little number next to your name on the scoreboard, you get the 24 ranking, and all of a sudden people start caring. Like, you could be 26 where you're unranked, but all you got to do is move up one spot, and all of a sudden you're, you know, on the highlight packages across the nation. You're on the bottom line. You're on the front page when you see the top 25. Like, it could be the matter of one spot, but it seems to make such a big difference just in the national recognition category.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, obviously we haven't been in this situation in quite a long time. So it's interesting to see. And something else that's, you know, there's not much of a gap between, I would say, the top 7 and the top 25. You know, obviously you got those powerhouses up front, the Ohio States, the Georgias, you know, Tennessee, you know. But, you know, once you move outside of those big dogs, I mean, it's really, really a toss-up for any of those teams. And, you know, I feel like Illinois, you know, that damn Indiana game still haunting me. But we, you know, realistically could be a top 10 football team, which, you know, is incredible. But, you know, I'll take 18, especially going into the bye week and then a very winnable game at Nebraska. Those guys will be healthy and ready to go.
Yeah, I think in terms of talking about like the top 10 potential matchup that you could get in Ann Arbor, and obviously we don't need to like get that far out ahead, but if we want to kind of reflect on the game we just witnessed and things that we can be like nitpicky about, I would say that like the red zone conversion rate probably needs to get better, because you can't beat Michigan just by, you know, kicking field goals. I know that like it helps your post-game win expectancy when, you know, you outgain a team by a bunch, you don't make any mistakes. But if you're going to really ascend to that level and really, you know, take on that mentality of playing to win and not just playing not to lose, I think you're going to have to find a way to convert those field goals into touchdowns when you get into the red zone. But otherwise, like, I don't really know what else you can say in terms of that and the kickoff return and special teams in general, just like needing to get shorn up. But otherwise, yeah, I agree. Like, like, it's bananas to think that like we're going to be favored in what. So I guess as like things stand, they could change if we lose a game here or there in the next couple weeks. But like right now, talking about the rest of the season, you would think that we would be favored in every single game, save for Michigan, which is just crazy to think about. Like Vegas thinks that we should likely be 10-2. That's just like maybe the Purdue game is close, but still just like the sentiment of that is wild to think about.
Yeah, the next two games I'm kind of categorizing as take care of business games at Nebraska and then against Michigan State. Both teams, I'm guessing, will put up a fight. Both teams are capable of beating us, but those are two games now looking at this Illinois team and what we've done over the course of this season. Those are games we probably should win. And I think the Vegas lines will reflect that, like you said, John. And then, you know, that Purdue game could be and maybe will be the decider for the Big Ten West. Then you go to Ann Arbor and then you get Northwestern at the end of the season. So to me, those next two games are really, if we take care of business like we should, we're going to put ourselves in great position to potentially win the Big Ten West and go to Indy for a shot to maybe go to the college football playoff even.
Is that too much right now?
Feel like reality, but that is our reality at this point.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about. But Dan, I know you had some questions from some frequent listeners that we are going to answer, considering it's bye week. Thought we would have a little fun here, see what we could come up with. And these questions have not been seen beforehand by John or myself. Dan might have. So if his answers are really good, you guys know why. But
on that note that we were just talking about, kind of the path through the rest of the season, a question here from KS Rober. What's the record at the end of the year, and why is it 13-1?
I will say it's 13-1 because two things: dominant run game, dominant defense.
Wouldn't it be 14-1? Because if we win out, then we would, because we'd be 11-1 regular season. If we win the Big Ten championship game, 12-1, win two playoff games, 14-1. So
it could be.
Looks like we're not shooting high enough. Yeah.
Is that your prediction, John?
No. I think we'll end the regular season 9-3, and then I'm going to really try hard not to talk myself into Ryan Walters scheming up a way to combat the best wide receiver core in the nation and in Ohio State. But I think realistically, like, I'm just going to have to root for Penn State to somehow figure it out, because obviously I think they're the most gettable of the three Big Ten East powers. But that's besides the point. But I feel like you were saying, like, these next two games are kind of take care of business games, Danny. And we'll obviously get into these more when we're talking about, like, the preview and whatnot. But I don't know. Nebraska always kind of seemed like going to Lincoln was going to be suspect in my head. But now coming off a bye, I don't know if it's going to be, like, the letdown spot against Michigan State. But I just have a feeling that it'll probably likely be 9-3, but maybe it'll be 10-2 in the regular season. I don't know.
I'm kind of with you on that. Here's Mikey. I got a good question here from Mike, MKSNYD on Twitter. He asks, how much would Mikey like to come back and play with this team?
Do you want me to answer for you, Mike?
No, I mean, you know what? I don't know that I would. Like, there's hasn't really been an itch for me to come back and play for this team. I feel like that's almost like not cheating the system to think that way, but, you know, I put in my time, I did what I had to do, and now to wish to go back because they're winning, I don't know that I want that. Like, even if they were losing, like, that wouldn't change my answer. Like, I'm just indifferent on it, and it's probably hard to comprehend because I can't even think of like a good answer for this. But to have an answer, it's, I'm not like begging or have not thought about what it would be like to play on this team.
Side question, how electric would it be to like play with and catch balls from Tommy DeVito though? I mean, I know you like love your quarterbacks, but just like thinking of the Jersey Moxie, like that dude seems like an electric factory.
Yeah, no, it would be great. I'm sure it'd be, you know, I'm sure those guys are having so much fun too doing it because they play with all that swagger. But it's cool to watch from the outside looking in. I will say that.
Yeah, it just seems like a fun atmosphere, but who wouldn't have fun when you're winning as much as you are right now?
Exactly.
Right?
Right, yeah. So,
all right, another question here. This one's about a Mount Rushmore, and this is a Mount Rushmore of players who have helped the turnaround. I think we would all agree Chase Brown is on that Mount Rushmore, right?
Yeah. So it's guys like in the past too?
I'd say guys last year and this year that have helped this program kind of turn around. I would throw Palcho on there.
Yeah, I would say Chase Brown, Palcho, and then I want to throw a DB in there, but I feel like the law firm Maybe I'll throw one of the law firm guys and then either Witherspoon or Kwan.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think I might even go Kirby on, because just like, I know that it was only 1 year, but maybe like the confidence that he, not that they wouldn't be confident this year, but just thinking of like the difference maker that he was and kind of like getting people like Illinois percolating in people's minds, because he was just what first, he was all Big Ten. So I don't know. I would maybe give him consideration, but yeah, I feel like I'll take whichever one of Kwan and Spoon you aren't taking. And then I'll probably go Keith Randolph just because he's like my personal favorite of the law firm. So you can take Johnny, but I mean, okay. It's kind of,
I'll take Johnny.
You guys have your own separate Mount Rushmores here or what?
Yeah, I'm going to go Johnny. So to name mine, I'm going to go Johnny, Spoon, Paltrow, CB2.
And we're saying no coaches here, so you guys are following the rules. But
I might take, maybe I'll just double up on Brown, on the Browns, and just go Chase and Sid. Just because you can't tell the story of the Illini turnaround without the two of them. I mean, you might not get Chase Brown if you don't have Sidney Brown like in the pipeline already. So he might be as vital just indirectly to the to the turnaround as anything. So
I like that thought process. I almost feel like you got to consider Tommy DeVito too, right? The most important position and what he's done thus far in the season. Like, I don't know if we're 6-1 without him. So I would even throw his name in there probably. You know, Spoon, Kwan are two good players. There's so many good players at this point. It's like, it is a great question. And it's hard to decide, but I would probably go DeVito, Chase Brown, probably Keith Randolph, just for what he did last year and this year. And then, I don't know, I might go Paltrow, or I might go Spoon with that last spot. But even John said you Kirby Joseph last year was great. So I don't know. I think I'll throw Paltrow as my fourth for what he's done for this program and help turn them around. But that's a tough Mount Rushmore to come up with.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of guys that, you know, you could throw into there. The quarterback to me is obviously, it's the most important position in sports. So I'll give DeVito like a honorary mention, but I'm sticking with the four that I went. And I like all the Rushmores we built. We might have to put together some little memes of that, post them, get some rankings, or we'll do a Twitter poll. Let's do a Twitter poll.
Another question here. If we do make it to Indy, how do you think we'll match up against Ohio State? And if it's Michigan, we'll obviously see that head-to-head, so we'll already kind of know what to expect.
Ohio State would be a test. You know, we like to run a lot of man-to-man defense, single high, and their receivers are, you know, probably the best unit in the country. Pair that with the best quarterback in the country, you know, our guys would have to make plays. And that's honestly the one team that really scares me is Ohio State, because of how loaded they are at receivers. And I know their backfield is, you know, just as loaded, but particularly like the style of defense that we play, I think Ohio State would have a chance at, I don't want to say exposing us, but really, really breaking us down with those playmakers that they have.
Yeah, I mean, their scheme is just so refined. Their athletes are just so good. They would find the weak links, and I know that we're loving how good the defense has been playing, but I'm sure they would find a way to, you know, attack the DBs in a certain manner that, you know, gets them all in fairly unfavorable situations. So that would definitely be a concern. But at the same time, I would talk myself into Ryan Walters just absolutely goading up and figuring out a game plan to neutralize all the five stars that they have. But, you know, if we get there, then we'll have that conversation. But I'm just excited for the journey to get to that point is going to be unreal.
If that's a legitimate question that we have to consider, I don't honestly won't really care how we perform against Ohio State. That's just gravy at that point.
I love that preview. We have to preview that game.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, that'll be great.
All right, one more question here. If it's not the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, what would be the SEC team you'd most want to see the Illini play in a bowl game?
Okay. So I'm going to have a two-part answer here. The school I most want to see Illinois play in a bowl game would be Notre Dame. I know they're not in the SEC, but I just think that would be an electric matchup, and we'd beat the Irish. But to answer the question, the SEC school, I would probably have to go with Kentucky, just because I feel like they're, you know, ranked similar to us. There's a lot of bad blood per se over the last few years with basketball. So I would go Kentucky. I think it would be a great matchup. And, you know, two mid to upper level conference opponents battling it out for, you know, conference bragging rights.
Battle of the basketball schools.
Yep.
Yeah, I might have seen this question because that's my guy Mike who sent that one in. But so I got like a little bit of a time to reflect on it. And I agree with your sentiment. I think there's like three factors to consider in terms of like who you want to play. And obviously you want to maximize all three, but in terms of like the three different areas, I think it's like one is like ability to win the game, two would be like the national spotlight, and three would be you know, the storyline. So obviously you want to maximize all three factors. I think that the ability to win the game while maximizing the other two would be Kentucky, like you said. Like, I'm not really a big fan of Will Levis. They've got a great running game, but we've seen that we can neutralize elite running games, and they just don't necessarily scare me. I think this is like the one year where Kentucky's overhyped, even though they've usually been criminally underhyped under Mark Stoops' tenure. But like, this is the year where I just don't think they're necessarily that good. So I would love to see them. But then also, what I think the best spotlight would be is getting one of the big three in terms of like playing Georgia, Bama, or Tennessee. Like, yes, it's probably going to end up similar to what we just talked about, Ohio State. But in terms of getting the exposure and people being like, oh, gosh, like Illinois is playing, you know, Alabama. What's going on with that? That would be awesome. And then I think the best storyline would be Arkansas. And I think like my brain was going to that place for post Wisconsin, because I was just like, oh, let's see if we can win a bowl game. And then hopefully we get there. And, you know, I was hoping that Brett Bielema would have the chance to win against both of his former employers. But I think I agree in terms of the overall sentiment of Kentucky being the best matchup. So that's my answer.
My answer would actually be Tennessee, because you get Alex Golish as offensive coordinator, Tim Banks as defensive coordinator playing Illinois. So there's some storylines right there. Then Tennessee is kind of this team of destiny right now. I think if they get got by Georgia or whoever else is on their schedule, they get knocked out of that college football playoff conversation. And you could see an Illinois matchup in maybe something like the Citrus Bowl down in Orlando, Big Ten against SEC. And just imagine a stadium of all orange. Both Tennessee fans travel well. Illinois fans will surely travel well for the first bowl game and however long. So to me, that's a game I think we can win, and I'd really like to see that matchup.
That's a good one. I would just be scared of Hendon Hooker throwing that all over us.
But they should be scared of Tommy DeVito, Chase Brown, Isaiah Williams, Johnny Newton, Keith Randolph, Devin Witherspoon. You name them, we got them too, Mikey.
No, I trust me. I would believe in us till I will believe in us till the day I die. But no, I think you know, Kentucky, Tennessee, or one of the big boys, Alabama or Georgia, would be pretty unreal, you know, considering where we've been.
We just named like half the conference, so we're probably gonna get one of those matchups.
Good odds, yeah.
But Rose Bowl would be pretty sweet too.
Oh yeah, there was one question I didn't even mention it, but the Rose Bowl question or Rose Bowl comment reminded me of this. Someone asked, "What are the odds of Robert jumping in the Pacific Ocean if we make it to the Rose Bowl?"
Is that like a thing?
I don't know. I think we just got to make. I think we convince him to do it. Like, we just tell him now, Robert, if we make the Rose Bowl, will you jump in the Pacific Ocean?
I feel like you just walk in it too, right?
We got to start a GoFundMe to get Robert to like skydive into the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
It's fun talking about
to
bowls.
Look forward to. Yeah,
tell you that much. And we're guaranteed one this year.
I do want to like I know that we've gone through pretty much the entire podcast now. I don't mean to like rehash what happened, but like I know we touched on Tommy and Chase Brown, but like also Tommy DeVito coming back from it was like I know Dan, you and me were with Robert, and he was said something like, "Oh, cortisol is an amazing thing," and I was like, I dubbed him Tommy Toradol because like he I don't know, Mikey, I don't know if they're if you ever got it, and that's maybe too personal a question, but like if the U of I like training staff ever dabbled in that, and I don't think they actually did. He probably was fine, but just like the outcome of this game, like that effort from him. I mean, that's just, I can't believe how well this has worked out, but the efficiency, the moxie, just everything. He's absolutely playing on a different level.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm allowed to answer that question. So I'm going to refrain from answering, but yeah, no, I mean, Tommy has been the, you know, perfect quarterback for us, you know, for this season. And we talk a lot about his swagger and his moxie, but he's also a damn good quarterback. He makes the right reads. He pulls it when he needs to. He's just a guy that you feel confident when you see him back under center. I mean, some of the throws he has and, you know, our receivers too, Brian Hightower making that over the shoulder grab. That's a difficult catch.
They remind you of anything, Mikey? Difficult. Robert said something when we were sitting with him watching the game of a catch it reminded him of. Maybe a play that even involved you.
Yeah. Kinda. A little bit.
His was more over the shoulder, yours was more hands back, but same spot on the field, which is why it reminded him.
No, but he made it look so effortless. And anybody who is doubting what I'm saying, go run 30 yards and try to catch a ball over your left shoulder if you're right hand dominant, because it's very, very difficult.
And then submit the clip to this podcast, tweet it at us, and we'll retweet it. If you can catch a 30-yard ball over your left shoulder,
we'll send you a T-shirt.
That would be amazing. But you got like dozens of submissions of people to actually try to run a 30-yard fade.
But no, I mean, Tommy, he's been great, and I feel like we could dedicate a whole podcast to talking about him and, you know, the effect that he's had on our team. It's, you know, it's unquantifiable. The way he's come in, taking control of this team, and really putting us in a position to, you know, win each and every ball game.
Yeah, all the stars kind of played their roles on the offensive side of the ball on Saturday. Tommy DeVito was obviously had his best game in an Illini uniform. The receivers, you know, Isaiah Williams, 9 catches, 62 yards. Pat Bryant, 7 catches, 58 yards. Brian Hightower, 3 catches, 55 yards. And we rode Chase Brown to 41 carries for 180 yards. So you kind of checked off the bingo card of Illini skill position players, you know, doing their thing on Saturday. And hopefully that's a trend we see continue moving forward.
Yeah, I know Chase gets a lot of the press, rightfully so. I mean, he fills up the stat sheet. But the production from the supporting cast has been great. And it seems like, you know, we know our number one, Isaiah Williams, that's the guy we're going to go to. Some of the routes he has, you know, on critical plays throughout games are just incredible. But then Brian Hightower and Pat Bryant, I mean, it seems like each week it's a toss up between who's going to have a better game. I know Pat has had statistically the better season, but I think Brian has still made some great plays for us. And you know, they're pairing well as a 2A, 2B type, you know, receiver crew.
And even Casey Washington, king of the contested catches, always getting in there for one or two critical catches, it seems.
Yeah, he sure makes catches look difficult, that's for sure. But as long as he's bringing them in, you know, keep doing your thing, Casey.
The one on the tipped pass was good hands by him. So
yeah, and that was third down too, right?
Yep.
So
very vital.
Yeah, wide receiver cores look great. They've done a lot to help DeVito, and it seems like this offense is starting to click and get into gear. So we'll see how that continues. Bye week this week. We'll be back for a preview of Nebraska next week. And thank you all for listening to this episode of the Field Pass. We appreciate it. Please subscribe. Follow us on Twitter. We're at the Field Pass. Leave a comment. Send us a video of you catching a 30-yard pass over your left shoulder, and we'll retweet it out. Maybe send out a couple t-shirts. Thank you, and go Illini.